So they were going around and like licking people's heads, and it was pretty dope.
Hey everybody, welcome to the Dimebag Podcast. I'm Tyler. We're joined today by Russ Steinberg.
Hello.
And Megan Bard.
Hello.
And Kevin Meacham.
Mm-hmm. Hello.
Oh, there he is. And our producer, Alex Cohen.
Hello, hello.
And the Dimebag Podcast, as always, is brought to you by J. Timothy's Tavern in Plainville, Connecticut, home of that guy we sent to J. Timothy's with the ads in the previous podcast. That was rad.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's the most impact any of us have had since we all shitposted UConn back to the Big East.
That's exactly right. That's exactly sure. Right. So today we're going to do our basketball season preview podcast. We've done our two round tables, which... accounts for the entirety of our season preview content, which, you know, is, we're doing really, really well. So where do you guys want to start? I mean, I think I was probably the most pessimistic in the roundtable. I think of us, Alex, you were the most optimistic, and the rest of you guys fell somewhere in the like 22-9, 21-10 range. I mean, what are you guys' expectations overall for this season?
I expect this team to be in the conversation for a tournament bid into February. So good enough to keep us interested and be playing meaningful games, assuming that they stay healthy, which is a huge assumption, especially considering how important Alterique Gilbert is going to be to this team. But I think it is certainly better than last year. And I think we have a lot to be excited for, and I'm hoping that this last year in the American can kind of be a fuck you revenge tour where we just beat the shitty teams that have beaten us in the past and still probably get swept by Houston and Cincinnati.
I really want to fucking win a game in Tulsa. For the love of God. I just want to beat fucking Tulsa in that shithole of a place. I just want to beat Tulsa twice this year. Fuck Tulsa is what I'm saying.
That's fair.
I'm really mad about it, Tyler. Really mad.
They're going to lose, though.
They are. So, Tyler, you mentioned that I seem most optimistic, and I think when I went to write the roundtable answers, I wasn't really thinking about some of the things that have transpired since I was like initially excited about the season. And honestly, the stuff with Book Knight and Springs has me tempering my optimism a little. Just because I think, you know, what happened with Book Knight, it's not a great look no matter how you look at it. And with Springs, I'm really concerned about how that affects our front court depth. And it's not even necessarily that I expected Springs to be a contributor because I didn't. It's just that's five fouls you can bring in off the bench or resting people or, God forbid, some, you know, injuries happen. Our front court now extremely cannot deal with an injury. And also, I don't think I was the most optimistic. I think Peter was the most optimistic.
Yeah, but he was. Yeah,
he's not here to defend himself, though.
That being said, I mean, the biggest thing that I want to see out of this season is just progression from last season. If I can see progression from last season, but if we don't quite make the tournament, I'll be okay.
You know, we probably project to be a solid NIT team. But I think that makes it so that the NCAA tournament is a reasonable goal for this team to have. And if that's the case, then I think the program's certainly on the right track. And I think it's really all about getting momentum going into next year, the first season in the Big East, when you could kind of say, all right, now this really gets going for real.
I feel like,
the thing with Hurley is like his teams from Wagner and URI made big jumps from year one to year two. So like I am expecting to see a significant step up from last year in terms of like the quality of play. Like I think they'll definitely be like a bubble team, like that, like Russ is right that come February, you know, they'll be in the conversation. I think I said I expect them to win the AACT, which is like really more of a wishful thinking because I really do want to leave this conference like middle fingers to the sky. But I think that like you're seeing it too, just even in like the way players look. Like Whaley looks like a different basketball player for even from like the end of last year, which is, you know, I think a lot of that's probably Coach Sal, but like he seems like he's like these guys look already even better than they did last year.
How many single digit games did we lose last year?
I think it was six, like one or two possession games.
Like if we take three of those and turn them into victories this year, I think that's good progression.
Yeah.
But that might, maybe that's enough to get consideration for a tournament bid, if not definitely an NIT bid.
I think I'm the most pessimistic of the group just on the wins and loss side, but I agree with you that a tournament appearance, I think, should be the goal, and I don't think it's an unattainable one. But what I'm really most curious to see is sort of like the small things, like the program building aspects of Hurley's second year. Like, can he have them coming out prepared every game? Can he manage to take guys that historically, and this is guys that we love, but guys like Josh Carlton and Christian Vitale, who are not the most sort of consistent players, and turn them into more consistent players, even though, and we can get to guys like Sid Wilson and Isaiah Whaley, like the talent level, I just don't think is there for them. Even if Hurley coaches them up, like a lot of other things are going to have to go right just because I don't think they're quite talented enough to really transform that. Like, I don't really foresee any scenario that turns into like a 27 win season, you know, which was pretty much like, that was always an achievable scenario, even with bad Calhoun era teams, just cause they were so talented.
Yeah. I think one of the areas where you saw the biggest change even last year from Ollie's final season to Hurley was that the team seemed to be a lot more prepared a lot more often. I think there are a few notable exceptions to that. The Iowa game comes to mind, the Houston game to end the season, that disaster at Temple. But for the most part, they came out prepared. Now, there were a few games where it just got away from them, like that Villanova game at the Garden. And that would be one – that would be a kind of thing where I hope that doesn't happen. And I think we're going to find out pretty early – if that's the case, because there's a decent chance they end up playing Florida, a team a lot of people project to be, you know, Final Four quality, twice in the first 3-4 weeks of the season, plus, you know, maybe a game against Xavier. They'll get Indiana at the Garden. They'll play at Villanova. So we're going to see, I think, really quickly. And those don't all have to be wins, or, you know, they don't even have to win, you know, the majority of those games. But if they could avoid getting blown out and kind of hang with the better teams in the country, I think that's really good progress. And, you know, maybe that puts them in position to steal a win or two.
You know, I think something that to sort of counter what Alex was saying, where he was feeling more pessimistic, I'm actually feeling more optimistic because they played Harvard in a secret scrimmage and beat them. And Harvard is expected to be a top 25, top 30-ish somewhere in their team. And they managed to get 88 points on Harvard, and that was without Bouknight. Springs didn't play. I think Gaffney didn't play in that one either. So they did that with just the guys from last year plus a cook. And to me, that says there's the ceiling on this team is higher than I think I was initially anticipating.
Can I have everyone yell at me for a second when I say actually they scored 86 points and Harvard's best player didn't play?
Yeah.
Please do not Russ-plain the game.
Sorry, I just had to make those 2 points.
No, I
don't even think that matters. Like they got 86 points off of Harvard, even without their best player. Like that says that they have a functional offense.
They scrimmaged Harvard last year too, and each team won a half. So just say that they tied.
Probably. Yeah. Tyler, you said something about, you know, you're not sure that the talent is quite there in some of these guys. And I think that's an interesting point because, like, on a player like Sid Wilson, I think the talent is there. He's a very talented player. I think the problem is that he was never Hurley's guy. I don't think Hurley even recruited him, if I recall correctly. And something that I've, like, learned through following the game with you knuckleheads is that, like, the recruiting process – is incredibly important in terms of relationship building. And like, if you thrust a new kind of hot coaching name into a program with a player he's never heard of, and the player maybe resents that coach for never having even contacted him, especially considering Hurley recruited out of the New York market. And, you know, why didn't you recruit Sid Wilson? I think that there's something to be said there that, like, even though the talent might be there on Sid Wilson, not that the relationship is broken between him and Hurley, but it may just not really have a good chance to allow him to develop as a player as much as some of the other players on the team.
Yeah, I mean, certainly when you recruit a guy and you've watched him play so much, I feel like you have a pretty good idea of what you're going to have to need, you know, what you're going to need to do when he gets on campus to turn him into the player you see. And when you're inheriting guys, obviously guys like Sid who need a ton of work on their game, you know, that's got to be a bit of a handicap to start.
Yeah, and Hurley said it himself. I'm thinking specifically the day of the Big East press conference when we were kind of just talking with him at the bar, that he just needs to get his guys in there.
Mm-hmm.
Again, the guys that he has recruited for a couple of years and who he thinks will have the level of talent that is worthy of being a UConn basketball player. And he was very clear that a lot of players on the team right now are not quite at that level.
I was trying to think of comparable UConn teams, right? Because there's kind of like two formulas to successful UConn teams. There's have the type of star that is going to carry you through your worst moments. And we saw some, you know, in the scope of UConn history, relatively low talent teams. I'm thinking mainly 2011 that were just a star was able to elevate them to the point where they were a national title team. Obviously, that team across the board was more talented than this team in a lot of positions, but just generally. And then there's sort of the 2009 formula where, you know, your best star, you know, the beat probably in that case, can't necessarily be counted on to dominate every game, but you have such a deep and talented roster that you can win every game. And I think that model is kind of what fits this team more, but I don't think any of the guys in this starting lineup touch the talent level of that team, and they're nowhere near as deep. So I guess what concerns me on that level is just, I don't see how they beat a good team if two of the three of Gilbert, Vitale, and Carlton are not having great nights. Which just to me, from what we've seen over the last 3 years, you know, that is a distinct possibility every game that two of the three of them are not going to have great nights. I think Hurley's done a good enough job of bringing in enough talent, and I think he's a good enough coach that they're going to be able to survive a lot of games sort of in the low-level conference schedule like that, but I don't think they're going to beat good teams that way.
Yeah, I mean, I think the thing with these guys is, like, if everybody, like, yeah, there's going to be nights where, like, two or three of them don't show up, but, like, there's going to be nights when all three of them do show up, and, like, you hope it's against Villanova or against Florida or whatever, like, you got to think that all it takes is one hot night against one of those teams. And, like, you know, I don't know. I think that there's enough options on the floor. Like, what if it turns out Brendan Adams really can shoot? Like, you know, supposedly that's a thing, you know, you're hearing. And, like, I know we're all sort of skeptical because, like, every year during the Ali years, you'd hear, like, so-and-so is, like, improved in this way that you wanted them to improve. And then they would get out there and be like, oh no, that didn't happen.
Megan, please do not speak ill of Antoine Anderson, UConn's next Mr. Big Shot.
So, like, I know it's hard for us to, like, have any faith in any preseason hype, but I think there is, like, it's just an exhibition, but, like, Brendan Adams Shaw did look better than last year in that exhibition. And, like, Whaley did look like he knew how to play basketball. And, like, I think there's maybe, you know, I don't want to get ahead of myself, you know, like, I don't want to get too excited about it. But, like, I don't think saying, like, yeah, this could be a tournament team is something that we should be, like, too careful with. Like, yeah, this could be a tournament team. It might be. It might not be. Yeah. But they certainly, you know, it's within striking distance for sure.
And I do, again, like, I have a lot of faith in Hurley. So, like, there are going to be a lot of games where things are not going well and those players are not playing well. And I expect Hurley to play as type of defense that can keep the game in the 50s and give UConn a chance to win. Like,
I feel like Meech said something in the roundtable about defense improvement. What was that about, Meech?
That was going to be the kind of my main point, and also related to what Tyler was talking about. When guys are having off nights, you win games with defense. And looking at Hurley, kind of the most notable thing that he's done in his stints at Wagner and Rhode Island is his teams have gotten really good at defense in the second season. Wagner, his first year, they ranked 233rd in adjusted defense in KenPom. In his second year, they were 73rd nationally. Rhode Island, the first year he got there, they were 172nd. His second year, they were 67th. And then they were the top, 60 or so the rest of his time at Rhode Island. Last year, UConn was 129th in adjusted defense. I think just installing his principles, having a slightly better level of athlete, having guards who might be able to play defense this year, all of that should make UConn like a much better defensive team. And it's going to insulate on those nights where, Gilbert's shot's not falling. They're not getting anything inside offensively. So I think if UConn's going to take a big step forward, it's going to come from a big improvement on defense.
I also think you've got some rim protectors in the mix. Also, like, a Cook can obviously block some shots, but even like Whaley was getting in on it. Like, Wills can block some shots. Like, you've got guards. Like, they've added some quickness with both the freshmen, but also, like, I remember when our guys used to be like the best shot blockers in the country every year for years on end. Like, it would be cool to have some shot blockers again.
Yeah, I think, and again, not to keep like falling back in the same concern, but I think what, like, all of that depends to me on getting like unexpected contributions from some of these other guys, because that sort of unyielding guard pressure defense is not going to work throughout the whole season if Gilbert and Vitale have to play 35 minutes a game each. Like, you're going to need Adams or Book Knight or Gaffney to step up and be able to come in without losing much. And losing Springs, as Alex just mentioned at the top, like, sort of the same principle, because if a Cook gets into foul trouble, which he's going to do often, or if Whaley is getting out rebounded by the big guys on whatever Memphis, without being able to bring somebody in off the bench to replace them, there's just not a lot of other options if the main options aren't performing. And I just think that's not a great recipe for success, but it's obviously nothing he can really do to change it other than just smart game planning and hope it works out.
I mean, I think that's why we're all at like 22, 23 games and not like 27, 28 games, like,
that's why I'm at 19.
You're just generally more pessimistic than we are, Tyler. Cause I guess I think for me is like, I don't think it would be unexpected to get meaningful minutes from Book Knight or from a Cook. Like, I think that's what you should be expecting from Hurley's guys, and those are Hurley's guys. So now I think, I think you have to assume that there is a reason he recruited these dudes and that they are immediately going to be able to contribute, because, like, that's what he's telling us he brought them in to do.
See, I absolutely do. I just don't think it's going to happen that fast.
I don't have trouble seeing Tyler's scenario of 19 wins. I just think that scenario requires more to go wrong than to go right.
That's true.
And I think it's slightly to the pessimistic side of where reality probably ends up. Like,
what part of the last 7 years has made you think that anything could go right?
We're going back to the Big East, baby.
Sorry.
Well, I mean, winning a title was pretty cool.
Good things happen in the world, my friends.
That's okay. Where I'm at, though. I mean, I've watched these very players perform relatively poorly for a few years, so I'm going to assume they will do that again until I see otherwise. That's just where I'm at. Again, like, to the opposite of Alex's point, like, I think 23, 4 wins is perfectly achievable. I just happen to think the worst case scenario is more likely. I'm kind of glad Peter's not here to yell at me.
He would be yelling at him, just to be clear.
Yep.
I also think that, like, the Springs thing, like, you're talking, like, in reality, that was a lot of, like, did not plays. There was going to be a lot of nights where he did not see the court or saw, like, only a couple of minutes. So, like, yeah, would we prefer to have him for, like, the one or two games where we could really use another foul or two? Sure. But, like, it's not a significant loss this year. And I think ultimately it's going to end up being the right move for him because he's really, really young. He just turned 18 at the end of September.
I think you are way higher on Whaley than I am.
I mean, maybe.
I view them as almost interchangeable, with Whaley obviously being better, but not by much.
I feel like that's very not correct.
The exhibition game was the first time in his career that Whaley has scored in double figures.
So he's improving.
He is improving. I mean, and he looks good.
The
I just
put on like 30 pounds.
Depending on him to be like...
No, I'm thinking he's a 10 to 15 minutes per game. Like, that's fair, where I'm expecting him to be.
To be fair to Whaley, I think part of our hesitation with him is that, like, for a huge swath of the season last year, he did not see the court.
Right.
Like, Hurley refused to play him.
He even admitted that was a mistake.
But maybe it was for very good reasons at the time. I don't know.
I mean,
know.
He's literally said since then, like, I should have played him more. Like, that
right,
was,
right.
You know,
so,
the wrong
so,
call.
He also just wasn't very good, though.
I mean, I think he's put on... I think part of that was he didn't have enough size to play the position he was playing.
How refreshing is it to see a coach say, I should have done something differently?
It is wild. Like,
it is nice.
Even the bare minimum level of accountability is jaw dropping.
Yeah. Because yeah. I think even at the time we were kind of like, you know, it is a little puzzling that this guy who's like clearly not leaving, you know, you're not giving minutes to, you know, giving to like Eric Cobb or whatever.
I remember Eric Cobb.
Do you? Remember? Let's remember some
yeah,
guys.
Remember
some guys?
Remember Kasum Yakwe?
Remember Large Dave?
No. Large Dave.
Large Dave.
At the same time,
R.I.P.
Like,
Large
like,
Dave.
A small
peace,
part
brother.
Of me, a small part of me thinks that he last season, he was not playing Whaley in an effort to get him to like transfer out, and Whaley made it clear that he wasn't going to transfer out, and so now he's like, yeah, it was a mistake to not play him, and he's my guy, and I'm going to roll with him because I've got to make the most of this situation.
Yeah,
and that's the subtext.
Yeah, you're right. Right.
Because I think when we saw Whaley play in flashes, we were like, oh, there might be a player there. Like, there's been some good stuff that we've seen, but when it comes to these kinds of things, you can't make a judgment call on how good a player is when they don't see the court enough. And even if like you saw him in flashes last year and he wasn't good in those flashes, I don't know that that's necessarily indicative of where he was at developmentally. Because it's just it's too small a sample size.
That team was bad. If he was good, he would have played.
Fair enough.
I mean, he spent.
I mean,
a
I don't. I don't quite.
Here, you know, I
you trust Hurley or you don't. You know.
I guess that's where I come down to on this is that he's been here all summer trying to improve. You know, spent time in the weight room. Done. Like, he didn't go home. He's been here since the season ended. Like, I do expect that to show dividends. And I think, like, yeah, granted, again, it was only an exhibition, but like, I think the difference was so stark from the player we saw last year. Like, yeah, I expect to get some contribution out of that kid. I do.
His jump shot looked pretty good.
Yeah.
If he can hit that like little
mid-range jumper
a couple times a game.
That's huge.
Remember when Jeff Adrian
that opens
decided
up a lot.
To add that to his game?
That ruled.
That was crazy.
Jeff Adrian's. I love Jeff Adrian.
But, like, it looked good. It didn't even look, like, weird and like, oh, God, what are you doing? It, like, was like, oh, that looks – that was nice. That wasn't, like – he looks like a kid who spent the entire summer in the gym. So, like, yeah, I think there's probably enough there to, like, back up Carlton and a cook. I think that's – he's going to be perfectly cromulent in that position.
And that's another improvement that we've seen now that Hurley is here. Guys actually wanting to be in the gym and actually wanting to get better.
Yeah.
And we've seen – even if it is against a Division II team, we've seen improvement in Whaley, and we have seen what looks like might be improvement in Brendan Adams.
Maybe Sal Alossi is just like a really cool guy, and he was a really
good
guy.
It sounds like he is.
If
it
I made
sounds
you,
like that.
Everyone likes yeah. him. It sounds like, yeah.
Well,
and,
I mean, coming from my perspective and how I view training in the gym, I really like the stuff that I see him doing with them. It's really
Alex
good.
Talks about lifting heavy things. You know about lifting heavy things.
I see the compound movements that he has basketball players doing, and it's all really good stuff for building strength.
Russ is flexing.
I was flexing. I just came from lifting heavy things.
That's good.
Yeah.
It's good for you.
How many games last year would you guess Isaiah Whaley played 10 minutes or more?
Two.
I was going to say definitely less than five.
Anyone else?
Six.
One.
You're right. And it was.
I only said six because Megan said less than five.
And it was the Isaiah Whaley game. That USF game where he scored 8 points and fouled out in 11 minutes. And it was the best game he ever played.
And that's wild because he was like a regular starter for like half a season 2 years ago.
Yeah, he averaged
Do you remember that? Yeah.
No.
You don't remember that.
Nobody remembers that. Large David Benedict Cumberbatch.
Yeah, he averaged 14 minutes a game in 18 and then 3.6 last year. Because I expect relatively little from Whaley, I'm putting all my eggs in the Akuk basket.
I think Akuk,
I think UConn's best chance at being a really good team this year is for him to surprise us and be pretty good right away.
He looks pretty good. He has had half a season practicing with the team, so it's not like he's brandy new.
Yeah, yeah. And that gives me hope. Even though he was practicing against Isaiah Whaley. I'm just kidding. I'll stop shitting on Porkchop. I love the guy, but...
What's his new name?
Poppers.
Poppers. Because of his little...
He's popping shots.
Popping little baby jumpers.
I think a Cook is the kind of the key to the season. I agree with Tyler. He just does things physically that no one else besides Sid can really do on this team. And he can shoot a basketball, so he's got that over Sid. So like you couldn't really tell from the exhibition game whether he's going to be like a solid rebounder, which is what they really need at the four.
Mm-hmm.
But if he can, you know, he's big enough and he seems to be pretty strong. If he can, you know, kind of serve that role and also give them, you know, 6 to 7 points per game, maybe knock down a jumper here and there, play a little bit in the post.
Keep some defense honest.
Yeah, do some rim protection. That's a pretty valuable player for what this roster needs.
Yeah, especially since, like, I don't particularly trust Carlton to be really consistent. I don't know. Does anyone disagree with me there? I mean, like, I feel
I
like...
I'm worried about fouls.
Yeah, fouls, I think. But,
Didn't he improve a ton on fouls as the season wore on last year?
Yeah.
I think the last, like, 5 or 6 games of the year, he managed to really, like, get it together.
I'm a little less worried about teachable stuff like that because now someone is teaching him.
Mm-hmm. You know, just generally, I'm worried about what happens when the three guys are not stepping up. And I feel like of Gilbert, Carlton, and Vitale, Carlton is the most likely to have nights where he just kind of disappears.
Yeah, it didn't help that for 25 minutes in the exhibition game, he just looked completely not interested in playing that game.
Yeah, totally. Against, like, and that's, they didn't have anyone over, like, 6'6". Like, he should have had 17 field goal attempts that game just out of, like, for fun.
I had 10 field goal attempts that game.
I know, you shot well.
Yeah.
I thought the interesting thing, too, was, like, Vitale, like, had a really solid, like, just sort of across the board. Like, he wasn't shooting awesome, and, like, I kind of expect that from everybody in an exhibition game, really. Like, you know, I expect shots to be a little off the first, you know, 40 minutes or so, but he, like, had a bunch of rebounds, a bunch of assists, some steals, like,
yeah.
You know, I feel like even on his worst night, he's still gonna, like, get shit done.
Yeah, one of my favorite activities is feeling like Christian Vitale played a bad game and then going to look at the box score. It was wild. I mean, and to, like, because I'm the positive one here, I mean, I am worried about Akuk rebounding at, like, the D1 college level right away, but Vitale is a really good rebounder, and we've seen in the past that, you know, UConn teams are pretty decent at having their guards make up for some rebounding deficiencies from the front court. And Vitale definitely fits that mold.
So, like, I'm fine with guards rebounding if it's because of deficiencies in the front court. But the problem is it doesn't necessarily translate to efficient play, because if your guards have to get the rebounds, now there's no outlet. And you can't transition as quickly.
There is, like, when you play with three guards, which UConn does all the time.
Yeah, I get that. I would very much prefer.
I actually think it helps even more because then you have one less pass you have to make before somebody's pushing the ball up the court. Like, if your guard is the one coming down with the ball, you're already in transition before anybody has to make a pass, before your big man has to find a guard to give the ball to start the offense.
Yeah, but he doesn't come down in position to move up the court. He comes down right. with his back to the direction he's going, probably with the guy right on top of him who was just going for that rebound.
Sometimes, yeah. But a lot of times they're, I mean, a lot of the rebounds that the guards are getting are ones that are a little bit farther away from the rim anyway.
Yeah, no, I just, we know, like, the way Vitale plays, he definitely gets into traffic.
He does.
And mixes it up. My, like, I would love it if Akuk was, like, this elite rebounder who could find an outlet pass very quickly, because I think that would really lend itself to Hurley's transition game.
I mean, I think you're going to have three guards on the floor most of the time, so I think I don't know that that's really going to be an issue.
Yeah, I mean, listen, at the end of the day, as long as we're getting rebounds, I'm good. I think in Hurley's dream scenario, he's getting efficient rebounding from his bigs.
You know who we haven't really talked about either is Tyler Polley, looked
Tyler
really
Polley
solid.
Year.
Yeah, I mean, his three-point shots were looking nice.
Yeah, we're 20-something minutes in this pod. We hadn't touched the guy who I'm actually the most optimistic about.
Yeah. Oh, well, why don't we talk about that, Tyler? Let's hear some good things.
I just think he made sort of the biggest leap ahead other than probably Carlton last year. And I think he is kind of the guy who can do things when other guys are struggling on this roster. Like we talked about, you know, I just mentioned Akuk is going to have to be good, I think, for UConn to win. But in a game-to-game basis, I think Polley is probably going to be UConn's most consistent player. I think he's the one who's going to figure out how to score 10 points a game without requiring a lot of, you know, attention on offense. I think he can be efficient. I think he can rebound well enough, and he's proven to be – he's gotten a lot quicker since he was a freshman. When he was a freshman, I feel like he was a really undependable defender because he couldn't stay, like – upright against a four and couldn't stay in front of a three, and he's improved on that. He really impressed me last year, and I just feel like if someone's going to take the next sort of logical but moderate step forward, it's going to be him, and I think it's going to be a really key contributor this year.
I agree with that.
It's Tyler Polley season.
He can really score from all over the place. Like, he can get to the basket, he can shoot a three, he's got a mid-range jumper. Like, I think he's going to be really valuable.
I think Meech and I predicted basically his same like percentages, but like if he can just turn into a 45% shooter and make over 40% of his threes, like that is an incredibly valuable guy. It's basically a lower volume DeAndre Daniels at that point.
I think last year showed that he can, you know, hit shots at a higher volume. 2 years ago, he was 9 for 39 on 2-point shots. Last year, he was just under 50%. So he's driving to the basket a little bit more. He's finishing around the basket. He's shooting threes. He's a great catch and shooter. And we have the guards who can beat people off the dribble now a little bit more than we did last year, I think, to really make him a key focus of the offense.
I was just thinking, it made me think, like, one area where I really hope Hurley can improve this team is not even necessarily shot selection, but just creating better shots. Because now I'm just having like vivid flashbacks of Polley missing a shitload of 2-pointers because he was taking bad rush 2-pointers. And then that doesn't even get you into Vitale and especially Sid Wilson, who I think was like 1 for 80 on 2-pointers last year. But
yeah, the half court offense is the thing I am a little
nervous. Yeah. I mean, I think if
like the transition game, I feel like is solid. And if they play the kind of defense they can play, like they can get a lot of points to transition. I worry about when they have to play a half-court offense.
Yeah, and I think, like, one of the key ways we'll be able to tell in the first couple of games, right, is, like, how that offense functions at the end of a shot clock. Because that's been where UConn has looked the worst on offense in the last few years, is when they're, whatever they try to do at the beginning, whenever that fails, like, what do they fall back on? And usually it's getting a absolutely horrific shot or turning the ball over.
It was like Christian Vitale from 6 feet behind the 3-point line.
Yeah.
Yeah, but when it goes in, though, it rules.
It does rule.
It rules so hard. Yeah.
Or Jalen dribbling into a triple team and like having
somehow
the ball
circusing it up there.
Or somebody just stepping out of bounds of their own volition.
That happens.
It happens so a lot.
It's like in like a college basketball video game where you like if you're not paying attention, you just run out of bounds.
Yeah. Or like where you could just push somebody over the half court line and get a backcourt violation. But yeah. UConn is
or
just
if you're
doing
Bobby Purvis.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
I don't know. Anyone else got thoughts?
I made a fun game for us to play.
What is it?
Oh.
Well, it's not so much a game as I came up with five things, and I want you to predict how many UConn will have this season, and then I'll keep track.
Oh, all right.
All right.
Okay.
First topic is Sid Wilson made jump shots.
Hmm. Are you going to give us over under, or are we just guessing numbers?
No, just guess a number.
7.
11.
Oh, no.
4.
15.
Wow. Russ, right. Are you guessing?
No.
Okay.
Well, I'll guess later.
Okay.
I don't want to think. I already thought about this.
Okay.
I don't want to think because I already did.
Yeah. Okay. Dan Hurley technical fouls.
Ooh. Way more than Sid Wilson jumpers.
Three T's.
All right.
Yeah.
5.
I'll go 4.
Hmm. Do I go the Frank Thomas or do I pick a high T? I'm gonna say 5 as well. Did somebody say 5? I'll say 5.
All right.
Yeah.
I just wanted to get my Frank
Vital
Thomas joke off.
Fouls.
3.
Ooh.
2.
1.
2.
Sorry, Alex, what did you say?
1.
And Meacham, you said 2?
2, yeah.
All right. The team's 3-point percentage.
36%.
33.
37.5.
Ooh.
They were 34.4 last year.
All right.
Okay, I'll go 35 then.
All right, last one. Over 2 games in the regular season, total number of rebounds that James Wiseman has against UConn.
25.
32.
Jesus. 21.
We got Alex.
15.
Wow. All right.
I like it.
Those are the ones I thought of while Tyler was talking. And I didn't
what I'm trying to say is fuck that guy.
Yeah, no, I agree. Fuck that guy.
Yeah,
fuck
100%.
That guy.
Oh, fuck him.
And
the better guess would have been 0 because he's declared ineligible on January 1st.
All for possible.
Yeah, because he's a FBI witness by then. You know who we also didn't talk about? Let's talk about him real quick. Is Jalen Gaffney.
Oh.
I don't know. How big of a factor you guys think he'll be? Because it might depend on... I don't know. We also didn't really talk about that. We jumped that topic on the last one because we wanted to say basketball talk for this pod, and then we skipped right over it this pod.
my personal theory is that he goes to court, and they're probably going to let him do this diversionary program, and... then Hurley will let him play within maybe not the next game after that, but like fairly soon after that. That's what I think.
I think we all were in agreement that he should not play in that Florida game.
Don't ask me this question.
Well, we would like him to play in that Florida game, but he probably shouldn't.
I mean, we know so little about what actually happened. I kind of default to Hurley. I do think that it's like similar to the Springs thing. Like it'll be an interesting test of how Hurley sees this season to me, because if he really drops the hammer on Booknight and gives him like I don't know 5 games, and assuming this isn't like truly terrible because we really don't know all the details, but like if we're all assuming it's going to be in the 2 to 3 game range and he comes in with like 5, I think it probably tells us that like he views this as a rebuilding year in a certain extent, or a building year, and is trying to set a tone for program building. Which I kind of feel the same about Springs. I mean, like, if they knew his grades were super shitty bringing him in, they would have had to really like him as a recruit to do that. And to get him to midterms and then declare him out, like, it is easy to keep these players eligible. We're not going to name names, but they've kept some dumbass kids eligible the last few years. And which tells me that Springs was either really not performing to the point where that was worth it in practice, or Hurley views setting a tone academically as sort of a core principle that he wants to enforce now before the games really start mattering. And that's kind of how I feel like we're going to get an insight into that with whatever decision comes down on book night as well.
See, I think they expected Springs to be eligible, and then I don't know that there's more to read into that than like they thought he was going to be eligible, and then the NCAA was like, actually, no. Like, you know, I don't know exactly what his grades were or what his SATs were, but like it sounded like they were not expecting that to happen. And
but
it's not like UConn made
in.
Well, there's two different things here. There's UConn admitting him, which is up to UConn. And then there's getting through the NCAA academic clearinghouse, which he did not. And like that's up to the NCAA. So that they're the ones who said he is not eligible. So UConn decided like to give him a full year redshirt.
I mean, and you also have to remember UConn is in no position right now to be fucking with the NCAA.
They did just give UConn $10 million. Basically.
Yeah. They gave Kevin Ollie a show cause while Bill Self will be coaching at Madison Square Garden tomorrow night.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I just feel like that was kind of just like they just kind of got fucked on that one a little bit. But I think with Book Night, like, again, and we don't know, like, this falls somewhere on the scale of, like, dumb kid shit to, like, serious situation, depending on what the specifics of it are. But I think, you know, based on what, you know, we've heard, it seems most likely that this is the kind of thing that a diversionary program is appropriate for. And I guess I do kind of also feel like Hurley is probably in the best position to, like, figure out what the punishment should be. And, like, I don't know that it's necessarily appropriate for us to know exactly what the punishment is. Like, obviously we'll know how many games he ends up being not eligible to play for because he will not play in a certain number of games. And I think last year we saw, too, that, like, he doesn't necessarily tell you how many games somebody's going to be suspended for until they, like, are playing now, you know? So I don't necessarily expect that we'll know in advance. Like, at some point, I think at some point he'll just be like, yep, you can play now. Like, you have served whatever punishment I deem fit, and now is when you will play. And that's when we'll find out. But I'm sure there are other things going on that we don't know about, and probably we don't really need to.
Anyway, Jalen Gaffney. It's going to be really good. MVP. MVP. Jalen Gaffney. The cat.
An ankle issue. I feel like that's why he was out for Harvard, and he only played a couple of minutes in the exhibition. But it's not anything serious. It's like a sprain or something.
No, it was definitely an ankle. I have no idea what to expect from him. I do think, again, not to really shit on guys like Brandon Adams, but the best case scenario is Gaffney being much better than Brandon Adams. Kind of the same way the best scenario for me is a Cook being much better than Whaley.
Yeah.
But.
Yeah, I think that's true.
I don't really have any reason to expect that, so we'll see.
I mean, if he can jump Brandon Adams on the Jeps chart, and Brandon Adams is also, like, halfway decent, I think that's, you've got to, if you can run three guards out all night, like, that does help for the kind of defense that Hurley wants to run. So if Gaffney comes in for, you know, 8 minutes a game and, like, maybe throws a couple of fouls on guys, like, it's fine.
Yeah. There's also the distinct possibility that Altari Gilbert explodes in the next week and Jalen Gaffney's a starting point guard, so.
Yeah, there's that too. That's true. Another ball handler never hurts.
Oh my God, who's that? Hello?
Hello? Hello?
Oh, it's David Benedict Cumberbatch. David, how are you?
Oh, it's terrific to be here. Thank you so much for having me.
Where are you calling in from?
I'm calling in from my family home in Shropshire.
Then why did you knock on the door?
It's English custom to knock on any door that you see.
Got it.
I'm in a bit of a rowdy mood this week. I'm celebrating England's win over New Zealand in the Rugby World Cup last week.
Congrats.
It's been fantastic. I've been adding strawberry to milk in celebration, and I feel as randy as the constable of Cheltenham, if you know what I mean.
I do.
Of course, England ended up losing in the final to South Africa, but you always celebrate a good thing that happens before a bad thing. That's why we announced that UConn was going back to the Big East before the football season.
Fair enough. David, are you here to tell us about the fine fare and beverages at J. Timothy's Tavern in Plainville, Connecticut?
Absolutely, I would. It would be an absolute pleasure. I'd like to tell you about the draft beer known as Sweatpants.
Oh,
It is a pale ale from the Kent Falls Brewing Company in Kent, Connecticut, with a 5% alcohol by volume. So if you drink 20, you will be all alcohol.
That's good.
Okay,
math.
Let's do that.
And it's available for the low, low price of $7.25. That is £42 for 19 ounces or 3 pounds.
All right. Well, David, thank you for stopping by and telling us all about the delicious pant beverage at J. Timothy's Tavern in Plainville, Connecticut.
In, you know, in England, sweatpants of the beer is called trousers.
Oh.
Just a little fun fact.
Thank you.
So in my attempt to participate somewhat, I looked up like old English insults. A Reuterbanks, someone who lives beyond their means or seems to spend extravagantly.
That very much applies to Yukon right now.
I think UConn is currently paying Randy Etzel in sweatpants beers. So.
Randy has to pour some of his into the cup of his assistants.
That's right. He's just funneling it into John.
Randy has to work at J. Timothy's to be able to afford his.
Oh, Randy, you old whiffle-ettle. An indecisive, time-wasting ditherer.
Kinda. I mean, yeah. Oh, this is starting to hit too close to home. Let's get out of this ad.
David, what should we do?
I think you should buy football tickets, and you should be sure to go to Madison Square Garden to play the Hoosiers of Indiana. I'm told they wear candy stripes. I don't care for that.
They're trousers.
Fair enough.
The candy stripe trousers. Very.
All right. Thank you, David. I appreciate it, and thank you to J. Timothy's Tap. All right, let's talk some women's basketball, shall we?
Let's do it.
So literally all of us said UConn was not going to win the championship.
Yeah, I don't feel good about that.
You don't feel good about your prediction, or that we all share the same prediction?
All of the above.
Well, why? Let's start with you, Megan. Why don't you think they'll win this year?
Well, I think Baylor and Oregon are really good this year, and which isn't to say that I don't think UConn cannot win this year. Like, you know, I did, again, an exhibition, but I think we were all a lot more worried, you know, at the end of last season when it seemed like there were maybe like five people on the team. And since then, it appears there will be more than five people on the team.
They're like six and a half people now.
Yeah. Listen, there are 9 scholarship players available right now, one of whom is Molly Bent. But
there are 8 scholarship players available.
And I guess Kamara is only expected to be out for 6 to 8 weeks, but like, again, I'm not sure how much they were expecting to get out of her anyway. But I did see some things from Aubrey Griffith. She looks pretty good. I get kind of like Gabby Williams vibes off of her a little bit. Like she's got some nice athleticism. But Anna, I don't really know how to think. There it is, that one.
Yeah.
She actually got the start, and she's like a big guard. She's got some like size to her, and she's got a real nice little Euro step that she clearly knows how to use. So I think
you know what I mean.
I have zero
idea how to use my Euro step.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't know how to use mine either.
But granted, you know, it's like D2 players, but she like knows how to get to the basket, take some contact, still make a shot. And I thought Olivia Nelson Adoda looked really improved from last year. She looks a lot stronger. And I thought, is it Adebayo? Is that how her name is pronounced?
Yes.
She's got some like legit post moves. She's not like as big, but she can like get the job done down low. So I think there's more options than I was anticipating, but you know, anything's possible. It's, you know, shit happens. You never know.
Yeah. I only watched the first half of the exhibition game. There were a lot of things I was pleasantly surprised about, and you hit on them already. Makarot, I think, being the first And biggest surprise, just because I didn't know what to expect from her at all, and she looked amazing.
She's much more athletic than I anticipated.
She's much more athletic. She's confident, and God, she could get to the basket. Nothing is going to stop her.
Yeah,
that was all great. As encouraging as that was, and as Aubrey Griffin was, I didn't see anything that kind of allays my concerns about this team. Mainly that I don't think they have the size or the depth in the front court to go up against a Baylor or an Oregon. That didn't change in the exhibition game, so I'm kind of right where I was, even though I think the team will maybe be a little bit more fun than I had expected.
I wish Gino would go Twin Towers again. Like Lobo and Walters. Like,
yeah.
I feel like this team needs to start playing with three guards and two centers, because the last few years they've just been bullied out of the NCAA tournament. And even watching that team, and I know we're all counting on Ono being better this year, but I just don't trust her to not, you know, I just don't find her dependable enough to compete with that level of size that the other sort of Final Four contenders roll out.
Honestly, I don't think she's strong enough.
You're right. Yeah. And maybe she'll get there, I guess. But like,
maybe people are saying that she's bigger, she's stronger than she was last year. I didn't see it in the exhibition.
Oh, she definitely is.
She is. I only watched 100%. The first half. You said that she was a lot better in the second.
Yeah. So I even think over the course of the first half, you know, it took her a minute. She made a couple like weird plays early on. But I will say she played in the FIBA 3-on-3 all summer long. Mm-hmm. And I do think there's been a big step up in her game. You know, fouls, it's hard to say. Like, who knows how that's going to turn out? But I do think she's got more. I mean, I picked her, I think, as my, like, she's the X factor. Like, if she makes a huge step up this year, if she can really, like, be somebody the team can rely on to, you know, play 30 minutes a game, like, they could really go somewhere. But like I said, I think there's more options there than I anticipated. I think Megan Walker looked really good. I think she needs to score a lot of points this season for them to be good. Mm-hmm. I think she needs to like regularly be scoring 25 points a game for this team to be good this year. But she looked good. She was scoring from all over the place. And Makarat does have a 3-point shot. It is the ugliest 3-point shot I have ever seen in my life. It is a dead straight line drive at the basket, but it goes in.
It's beautiful if it goes in.
It's that Eastern European efficiency.
Yeah, just like hucking it straight at the basket. It's very strange. There's no arc on it whatsoever.
It's frustrating when you have like concerns about UConn because they only play 5 meaningful games before like their season could end at any moment.
Yeah.
So it's like, I'm not even sure that at this point in March, like early March, we're going to have any idea what the answers to these questions are.
I have a question as someone who didn't watch the exhibition. Is anybody worried about the ball handling on this team? Obviously, Crystal's great.
No.
Not even a little bit?
Not even a little bit.
Williams is almost as good as Dangerfield, and Walker's not bad either. And Makarat actually was
She's got a handle.
Surprised. I agree with you 100%, Megan. I was shocked at how athletic she was.
She has got a handle. I was not expecting what I saw from her at all. But yeah, she's got a handle. She can shoot. I mean, she gets the ball to go in, but she can get to the basket. So yeah, I'm intrigued. Okay. Like, passes were snappy. Okay. Like,
I'm not sure if this is like an offensive thing to say, but I was surprised at kind of how American her game is. Like, I don't know what I was expecting, but it was not that.
Except for the Euro step, yeah. It was...
You expect any subtitles? Like,
maybe. I don't know. I was just not expecting her to essentially, you know, look like Kia Nurse or whatever.
I think it's funny that we're all, like, shocked that this random player we never heard of, but that Gino flew across the world to get, is actually really good.
I know. Gino barely leaves, like, Eastern Connecticut.
Unless you come to Gino's house and bring him wine and like play on the hoop in his driveway.
I mean, in fairness, it's illegal for Gino to drive after like 6:30 p.m.
But yeah, no, she was. I think she was probably the most pleasant surprise. But I, you know, I like I said, I think Griffin's probably I mean, she's still a little raw, but like there's some real athleticism there. I'm looking forward to seeing what Gino does with her. And I think Adebayo is going to be like, you know, a solid enough contributor. She's definitely higher than Kamara on the depth chart. That's for sure.
I'm actually, and this is, again, out of character for me, but I'm actually kind of expecting Kyla Irwin to be a useful piece this year, too.
She hit 3 out of 3 3-point shots.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And her, like, shot actually does look nice, I will say.
She's following sort of the trajectory of development that you would expect of somebody with her talent level, I think, which is to say that she's turning into a nice role player. The problem, I think, is that she's like 6th on the depth chart when she probably should be 9th or 10th. But, you know, coming in and playing the 4 for, I don't know, 10 minutes a game or something, like,
yeah, she's a solid passer. Should be fine. Set a screen. Doesn't do anything stupid.
I don't know the appropriate way to say it, so Alex, please edit this, or Tyler, whoever does.
No chance.
Well, she looks a lot different than she did 2 years ago.
Canceled. Sure. You're canceled.
Well, I mean, physically, she is in much better shape.
Yeah, and she's moving a lot better, you know, across the
she
floor.
She moves a lot better, yeah.
She's much quicker. She's not going to lose her defender.
Yeah, she
just
looks comfortable, too. You know, like, it's just the confidence, I think, of playing on really good teams for a few years. Like, she looks like she belongs there.
She's got really solid fundamentals. Like, I'm never worried when she's on the court that, like, she's going to fuck up.
Imagine my shock that Gino has actually developed a player.
Oh, you know who he hasn't developed? It's Molly Bent.
Oh,
I will not stand for the slander.
She won the women's three-point competition.
Was the first player off the bench in the exhibition game?
No, no. She came in for Makarat first, so maybe he just like wanted to have a chat with her. I don't know.
Who is the guard that should come in for Makarat?
I don't know. That was my question. I don't know. Because I think you had Crystal, because you had, like, let's be honest, but so you had Crystal, Kristen Williams, Megan Walker, and Owen on the floor. Makarat comes out.
Well, Griffin. Then it should be Griffin.
I guess,
right?
I guess you hope that Griffin, by the end of the season, that Griffin is the sixth one off the bench, or, you know, is the first one off the bench. Or Adebayo, either, you know, depending on, like, hopefully it's not Adebayo.
I think it might have to be Adebayo.
Yeah, I mean, you know, or either
or
one of
them. Or she might have to start, I don't know.
Or maybe
she
wear...
averaged like 15 rebounds a game at Murray State.
Oh, I know.
She was really good. But the
Is Murray State in the American?
They will be next year, and we wish them the best of luck. Who was the player that transferred to George Mason and became all world?
Natalie Butler.
So that's like the asterisk to Adebayo's performance at Murray State.
Westbrook had her waiver denied and they're appealing it. So, like, I mean, I don't know what the likelihood that they'll win that appeal is. I don't expect it to be that high, but there is like potentially a slim chance that Westbrook might be available. And I think
if Westbrook is available, does your expectation for this team change?
By a win or two, but not the outcome.
I think I'm with you.
They might.
I think they're
probably losing in the Elite Eight with Westbrook. Maybe they lose in the semifinal. I just don't trust the front court. I mean, we've seen
that's the thing. Like,
we've seen Notre Dame.
I think Westbrook
and Mississippi
puts them firmly
State.
In the top four.
Like, we've seen other coaches that are good now in this era of more parity in women's basketball be able to take UConn's guards out of the game. And I just don't look at the roster and I don't look at anything else that's really changed, especially with like how good Oregon is this year. I just don't trust that not to happen again.
I'm really looking forward to Sabrina Ionescu to A, graduate, and B, play for the Liberty next year. Like, that's going to be fun to have her playing at Barclays. So.
I hope Tina Charles teaches her to hate you.
Like, I know we're not, like, everyone's sort of assuming that's a loss, but they are having to come and play at Gamble on a weekend. Like, they're never going to have played in front of a crowd like that. Not one of them is ever going to have played in front of a student section that fucking crazy with that many, you know, it's already, I think it's going to, I mean, you got to assume it's going to be a sold out game and those kids are going to be fucking riled up.
Oh, they could certainly win that game. I'm just not terribly confident in them beating Oregon with their season on the line in the Elite Eight or the Final Four.
I mean, you know, you never know.
I think
like it's the tournament. You never know what happens.
I think just the way their roster is and the way women's basketball is now, they're going to play three games. Like, to win the championship, they have to play three games in a row, basically, against teams of similar or better talent levels. And I just don't count on them to go 3-for-3.
I mean, I guess that's sort of where it comes down to. Like, could this team potentially win a national championship? Sure. Like, it's possible. Like, who knows? Maybe, like, Baylor has a terrible night against somebody else and they lose in the third round. Like, you don't know. You don't know what could happen. And, like,
I mean, how many times have we been the clear best team in the country and not won the title?
So, like, anything's possible. Last 3 years. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, not last.
I don't know that that's true.
Well, I think three of the last 4 years. Let's go with that.
I mean, it seems to be, and again, I didn't get a chance to see the exhibition, but they're one of the six or seven championship contenders. If, you know, Nelson Adota breaks out, or if Megan Walker has a bigger year than we're thinking, or Kristen Williams turns into, you know, that superstar that she showed flashes of last year, there's certainly a high ceiling. But I think from what I'm hearing, it does sound like the front court's an issue, and I'm a little worried about the guard depth.
I mean, they're certainly not really with Westbrook. Like, they're not in a place to withstand an injury.
Right.
Like, we saw when Samuelson got banged up in the Final Four, even the last, whatever it was, the last few years. Like, they really had nowhere else to go.
Yeah, I mean, I got to hope that Griffin has a pretty short learning curve this year, that she like can get up to speed quickly, because I think she's definitely someone who has the ability to make a big difference. Like, she's got the athleticism, but she's got to like figure it out. I do expect to see some really awesome Crystal assists. She was dropping a no look pass, and I love some crazy.
I wish Crystal, I know, passes. I really wish she wasn't a senior, because Dangerfield on next year's roster would be super fun.
Well, you're gonna have Paige Buckets, so
Paige Buckets. Oh, that's a good name.
Cannot wait for Paige Buckets.
I know.
Diana Taurasi 2.0. I'm ready. I'm ready for the Paige Buckets era.
I'm pumped. Hopefully Hurley can get like another top 50 guy, so we can just look forward to next year all season.
Did you know in 2021 the UConn men's and women's basketball teams won the national bowl?
I'm sorry, you trailed off.
I do have I have one question, not really a numbers game, but who is the player on this year's team that you think you could most easily bait into sneak faving one of your tweets during the season?
Crystal.
I think, like, yeah. I think Kristen Williams.
I could see that too. But I feel like Crystal's the one who has like the most like, yeah, she would do it. Like, she completely peer pressured Ono into dunking it first night, and like got on the mic and was like, all right, everybody, like, my girl wants to dunk, like let's get her to dunk. And I appreciate people who peer pressure their friends in that way.
I'll go Williams too. She seems like she would like our shtick. All right, are we good?
Yeah.
All right, everybody, thanks for listening to this episode of the Dimebag Podcast. See you later.